Welcome to our Team Roundtable podcast, where we explore the hot topic of the week here at CRA Resources. And just a reminder for those of you tuning in for the first time, CRA Resources is a unique recruitment agency with a single focus of providing CRA staffing for clinical studies across North America. So, Angela, what's the hot topic of the week?
I see it posted all the time. People don't understand why they submit their resume to an application and then they have to go bucket by bucket and add the details that's already in their resume into the application. So what we thought we would talk about today is why there are extra steps in the hiring process, like as in having to submit extra things into the portal that's already into your resume. And the bonus is we're going to talk about how to use those to your competitive advantage. So if you've ever wondered why you have to complete an online application that makes you retype everything that's already on your resume, why you have to complete a competency assessment before anyone will schedule an interview, we've got that going on right now with one of our clients, a request to give a presentation during the interview, how you handle things like behavioral interviewing, all of it. We're going to give you the reasons why these things exist. And once you see them, we're hoping that you as a job seeker will stop seeing them as hoops to jump through and start seeing them for what they actually are, which is your opportunity to separate yourself from the crowded field, especially those individuals that just say, see resume, rather than actually populating the information. So with that being said, let's go. Let's jump in.
I totally get this because there was a time in my life where I would be like, why am I filling out this application? Why am I doing this? Here's my resume. It's beautiful. Why don't you love me enough to just love my resume? But like, so I get it. It feels redundant and it feels like busy work and you're already doing job searching on top of life. And I get that. But the first one is, and it's non-negotiable, it's a legal reason. Companies have to maintain a standardized, auditable record of every single applicant who moves through their hiring process. And your resume and everybody else's comes in different PDF formats and layouts and fonts, not standardized, not auditable. And I love your beautiful resume, but not going to cut it for on a legal side. The second is technical. The ATS systems that you hear so much about isn't reading your resume in a human way, right? It needs something much more, you know, check the box in a way. It's going to look for job titles. It's going to look for dates, skills, education. And when those fields are formatted in a resume, the parsing is imperfect at best. It misses a lot.
It does. And it can cause you to look like a fake or fraudulent candidate whenever it parses incorrectly.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So when you have this completed application form, the ATS can just bang it right out and can read. It finds exactly what it needs. The third, and this is the one that people get a little like, oh, what's this? Is consistency. So your resume and the application answers should match because they're going to be compared. And it's not like casual, like, oh, yeah, they worked at McDonald's. This is like, we need to see the same job title, the same dates. We need to see like a gap that appears in one that doesn't appear in another. I'm like, you have to be able to continue to tell the same story. And if you're being honest, the story is easy to tell. And the last is simply operational. A recruiter cannot move forward, cannot set up the system, cannot put you into their system without a completed application on file. I have this all the time. They're like, why do I need to do this? I was like, I can't set you up in the system without it. So please fill out the form. Please help me help you. You know?
Yeah. Agreed.
Yep.
I like what you said, Maya, with you got to tell the same story. You have to be consistent with your story, but also be consistent with your story verbally and written.
Yes.
Yep.
That's a big thing.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Make sure it matches. I mean, the top three things that candidates get wrong when they're doing this is they're rushing through it because it feels redundant. I've definitely done that. I roll my eyes and I'm like, oh my gosh, I just did this. Now I just want to submit the application. Now I got to do all this. Leaving fields blank or writing C resume. I am also guilty of this. And it was really, I look back and I'm just like, oh, it was just really lazy of me at the time.
Well, you didn't understand the reason why you were being asked to do it though, did you? So that makes a big difference as well. I think you're like, oh my gosh, can't you just parse my resume? The simple answer, job seekers, no, all systems don't. And by the way, your resume might not be parsable. You might think it's a beautiful PDF version and maybe you did this really great Canva document or whatever. They're not all parsable. For the system, it could be just this blank document, right?
Or when people send a scanned document of their resume, but it's a PDF, so the ATS should be. I'm like, that does not work like that.
It doesn't scan.
Nope.
Yeah. Nope.
And then another thing that they get wrong is inconsistent dates, titles, or details. And if you're wondering, like, do people really get this stuff wrong? Yes, we see it all the time. Like, people's LinkedIn profiles versus their resume, like, they'll be years off, and you're just kind of like, why? You know? Mm-hmm. So think of you submitting your application as a second chance to tell your story. I would say think of it like your college statistics class, and you can't move on with the rest of your degree unless you pass this class. So it's like you can't go and get the job unless you pass the application system. So, you know,
that's true.
Exactly. So on our end, you know, having an inconsistent application just kind of slows everything down, and it just kind of creates more questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would agree with that. I recently was just helping my husband because we just moved to apply for places. And he would tell me, just load my resume and just, you know, I would help him. And I'm like, you can't do that. It's asking for that information. So I just recently helped him with that not too long ago. So usually with the ATS, in simple language terms, is an applicant tracking system, if no one has heard it as of yet. And it really just scans, sorts, and ranks applications before a recruiter or a human sees it. So if you're uploading your stuff incomplete, you're not going to be looked at. It's going to be looking for a keyword that matches between your application and the job description. So definitely take a look at that job description before you just upload your resume and start filling out your info and make sure that it aligns. That way you get filtered. What Angela, I believe you said with the Canva, beautiful resumes, beautiful tables, graphics, very squiggly, pretty fonts. They're not going to be readable in the ATS system. No,
they're really not
Be careful with that. What candidates need to do is mirror, like I just said, the language in the job description, not word for word, but, you know, certain similar terminologies, and making sure you did it. Don't embellish. Just if you did it, oh, I like how it's been phrased that way. Let me tweak it a little bit so it looks like it's the same thing. You also want to make sure that you're spelling out acronyms at least once. Like, don't just put CRA in all of your titles. Spell out CRA at least once.
That is really good advice. I want to stop there for a minute because I think that one is probably one of the best advices that you – all of this is great, but that is so critical. I will look at a resume and I'm like, I have no idea what they're talking about.
Yes.
Yeah. And I've sat in this chair since 2008. Imagine a company that has a junior sourcer that's not really understanding this industry. They are not going to know what those abbreviations mean. So smart, Natalie. Very good idea.
Thanks. as we had discussed earlier as well, just making sure your resume and any formatting is clean and simple. Standard fonts, no text boxes, no headers. It's just important to just keep it clean. Because at the end of the day, you don't want it to look all pretty. You're just wanting to share your story of your experience. And clean and simple is perfect for that. Like I said, also include relevant keywords in your resume as well as your application. And don't just stuff into a hidden block at the bottom with other keywords or things like that. You just want to keep it simple. I'm going to add an extra layer here, which I think Jenny's going to talk a little bit more about it as well. But as a clinical research associate on your resume, make your therapeutic information clean and precise and easy to read. Just don't just put it in a, like you can put it in a summary, but I know me as a recruiter, I love it when it's in like a bullet format or something to where it's like, bam, right in your face. I have X amount and this therapeutic. I have X amount and this therapeutic. It just, it's easier for not only the human when they get to your resume, but also that applicant tracking system. If it's for an oncology study and you have oncology listed in your therapeutic section of your resume, you're filtered. You're one of the first ones they're seeing most likely. So definitely I would encourage to add that as a clinical research associate, a little bit more detailed about your therapeutic background.
Yeah, I would agree. We really think the therapeutic area is one of the most important ones on your resume. Yeah. And it's one of the primary filters when it comes to hiring in clinical research, mm-hmm. both the ATS system and recruiters who are looking at it. That's one of the biggest things that we look at. Sponsors and CROs both are often looking for protocol specific or TA specific experience, not just general monitoring. And I would say almost every job we get, there is some kind of therapeutic experience mm-hmm. requirement, almost everyone. So that's a big thing that we look for. And instead of just listing a few at the very top, you might want to actually go more in depth because that's going to help us see that you're a great fit right away. Adding like things like which phases it was that you worked in that therapeutic mm-hmm. area and what role you were in. Were you monitoring in that role? Were you doing something else? You making sure that you have that for each therapeutic area. How long ago did you work on that therapeutic and how long did you work in it? Those are all things that are really important to us. So if you just have them right there where we can see them right away, that's perfect for us. And that makes us just reach out to you first, especially the applicant tracking system. We do search by therapeutic areas. Mm-hmm. So if it's on there, it's going to find you first and you're going to be one of the first people we reach out to for our job. So, so important. So I definitely recommend having a table with all of that information, and it's going to help you as well when you do get to those applications and it asks you to yeah. fill out all that information. You'll have copy it paste. Already. Yep. Exactly. Exactly. It's going to save you time in the long run, too. Mm-hmm.
No, I agree with all of those. And when you're building that table, you guys, of your therapeutics, and I love all of the details that you ask them to provide, Jenny, because we ask all those questions whenever we do our intake forms is not only the name of the therapeutic, but the indications, mm-hmm. the number of years and months you've worked it, the phases you've worked on it, how long ago you've worked it. If you guys are populating that into a table, make sure that table is scannable, too. I see this mm-hmm. a lot as well, yeah. as people will yeah. keep an Excel spreadsheet of all of their work, and then they just take a pic of it and put it into their resume, and that isn't scannable. But to your point, Jenny, if you're now filling out an application, you've got something you can copy and paste. If you can't gracefully copy and paste from your own table, then the parser's not reading it properly. So keep that in mind as well. So yes.
I was going to say, if you don't want to do a table, I have seen from several folks in the resume where I'm just going to throw an example here. They worked at Parexel from January 2000 to January 2005. And then below that, they'll list the therapeutics yep. they worked mm-hmm. on during that time of employment.
Love it.
So if you mm-hmm. don't want to do the table and spend extra time, just it's a quick
do it
little
under
sentence.
Each.
Yeah, mm-hmm. do it under each employment. And then that will also help the recruiter when they mm-hmm. do actually get to see your resume after the ATS and speak to you. Oh, I see at this employment you worked on da-da-da-da-da. Talk to me a little bit about that. This client yep. is looking for this experience. Just to make yep. it easier for you.
It's context, isn't
yeah.
it? Yeah, mm-hmm. and it becomes a supporting actor showing proof that you've done the work that you said you have done. And in today's market with so much noise in our industry, and Gartner just this week published an article that stated by 2028, one in four, and this isn't just clinical research, by the way, you guys, this is a global statement. Globally, one in four candidates have been created by artificial intelligence.
Wow.
That's Gartner. You guys, this isn't Angela talking about this anymore. This is becoming a really big deal. And so you guys as job seekers are that we're not even talking about fraudulent candidates here. We're talking about candidates created by a bot. You're competing with that. And you're also getting caught in that dragnet to where if you aren't showing proof on your resume, someone's going to think you're fake or fraudulent. And so put the proof there. And the therapeutics is a key area to do that. And not only will it be picked up by the bots, the applicant tracking system, but the humans that to Natalie's point will see the context and it will really matter. But don't forget other things too, like drug versus device.
Mm-hmm.
You know, using those terminologies, because we look for those terminologies too. You know, bioequivalent versus, you know, device studies versus whatever. So those are really important too. Decentralized, hybrid, risk-based monitoring. Look at the key words that matter. Just before we started recording, Maya was talking about SDV. She searches for SDV in your resume, y'all.
I hunt it out. I'm looking for it.
Exactly. So those types of things are important. Specific platforms that you've used, Metadata, Veeva, Oracle, these are also searchable. We have clients all the time that says, we use Veeva Vault. I don't want to train somebody on Veeva Vault. Find me CRAs with Veeva Vault. If you got it in your resume, you're going to bubble up to the top, and you're going to be one of the first ones that we reach out to. It doesn't necessarily mean automatic rejection if we don't find you, but if we place the position before we get to you, then you've lost anyway, right? Industry versus government versus investigator leg, mm-hmm. interventional versus observational, all of those keywords matter in your resume. Out in therapeutics, absolutely important. These things need to be layered into your proof statements underneath each of the employments as well.
And now we get to talk about the best part that candidates love, which is competency assessments. And that is totally sarcastic. because, you know, we get it. You know, you have 15 years of experience as a CRA. You know, you have a bunch of different therapeutics. You list it all on your resume, and now the company is asking you to complete a competency assessment. And I can totally see how people might get a little defensive about that. You know, you're just like, what do you mean I have to take this test? Look at my resume. This is my stuff. But there are some really good reasons why competency assessments are important. And like Angela said, fraud is a really big one. I mean, 1 in 4 candidates, I mean, that's a really big like amount. And the standardized assessments is a really big necessary layer in the process to make sure that you're actually competing with real people and not just bots or fake things. And they also give the hiring teams a consistent data point across all the candidates. So I feel like it's more fair that way, yeah. You know?
Well, it also helps those of you guys that suck at creating resumes or LinkedIn profiles.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you may not have the prettiest resume. You might not have the prettiest LinkedIn profile. You know, maybe it doesn't show the proof statements that we tell you guys you need to put in there, but you're represented by someone like us or whatever. It levels the playing field, because the answer to the competency question is the answer to the competency question. And that you get to shine because you get to show that you know what you're talking about, and you're not showing that you're a great resume writer. You're showing that you're a great CRA.
As someone who has done a competency assessment and bombed at it, like, it was very clearly, I was like, oh, I could maybe have done the job, but I didn't have all the necessary skills that they were looking for. Like, when I say I bombed, I bombed. Like, I was like, uh-oh, I did this wrong. It's also a self-assessment. Like, maybe I'm doing this wrong. Yeah.
That's a very good point. Well, it does help fit too, right? So like, if you're a really good CRA, but you're not a really strong site manager or vice versa, and all of the questions are targeted towards the area that you're weaker in, you're absolutely right, Maya. It's a fit for you. Because then you can think, oh, I didn't realize maybe I am a little weaker in this area than I thought, and is an area for me to go back and shore back up again. So there is that as well. Or the company's looking for something I can't give, which is an honest assessment too, right? So I think the biggest thing here is you guys that have requested or been requested to do a competency assessment, that's a really great move, y'all, because they're not going to take the time to review those responses unless they're serious about you. So you guys be serious about taking it. Dedicate the time. Make sure it's quiet and protected. Don't let your families or your dogs or your animals or the UPS delivery guy interrupt you. Make sure that you're really set and centered. Make sure you read the instructions carefully. Make sure that you answer based off your actual experience. Don't give hypotheticals. This is how I would handle it. I mean, think about what the question's really asking and then provide an appropriate answer. Because having adequate time in a distraction-free environment is going to really matter whenever it comes to you being able to provide great responses to these assessments.
And now you filled out the application. You wrote your resume. You filled out the application. You did the TA table. You standardized for ATS, you did the assessment, and when you get to a specific level, let's be really honest, there's going to be another step. And this is like, oh my gosh, how many more steps? But at a certain level or for a certain role, they want to now see how you think on the spot. But on the spot's a little tough, but like they want to see how your brain works, how you problem solve. And these will be in the form of a presentation interview or a situation-based discussion. The, you know, this is beyond just the interview. It's not just questions and answers. It's like, show me you can evaluate. Show me you have opinions, and show me you know how to present to a group. Especially if you're going at a higher level, you're going to be presenting. Yeah. So if public speaking is not your thing, you're going to make it your thing real quick, because you got to be able to communicate. You got to be able to communicate like that. So, and it's not really about, oh, here's my slide deck. Here's everything that you, here's the question or the problem you posed. Here's the slide deck with 10 billion points. And I'm just going to sit there and read it out. It's not, we're not doing that. Instead, we're going to try and communicate clearly. We are going to communicate clearly. We're going to organize information, and we're going to do it with some pressure on top. You want to know your audience before you start this. Are you talking to a specific team? Is it only CRAs? Is it CRA, HR, and admin? Is it a panel across the entire company? How, if you know your audience for this presentation question, then you're able to choose your language. So maybe if it's only CRAs, you're going to use shorthands in some situations, or you're able to like do more niche communication styles, where if it's across the board, you're going to want to be more general. You want to make sure everyone understands what you're trying to communicate. They're going to be looking at your level of detail and what you choose to emphasize as well. Like what are the bigger picture and the smaller details that are important to what they're asking you in this presentation? You want to keep the clean, like I said earlier, slides are going to be clean and minimal. Not 10 billion points that you're reading off. You want them easy to follow along with. And you want to lead with your findings or recommendation, not the background of like, oh, this is the problem that you gave me, and this is all the things that went wrong. No, we want to start. Show me the solution already. Show me what your findings are. Show me what your recommendation would be. And then I can't say this enough. Practice. Man, I just remember my elementary school teacher saying, practice your speeches out loud when you had to do public speaking. And you have to practice in front of your spouse, in front of your friends, your dog, the UPS driver. You could corner
the
him.
The dog.
Yeah, like make them listen to you and practice it and see like what happens and where you maybe need to shore up your presentation skills or your communication skills or how you want to communicate, essentially. Mm-hmm. This is all what they're evaluating at that sense. And then you might be asked, these are some examples of what exactly you could be asked. You could be asked on how you would handle a specific protocol deviation or a site conflict, data integrity issue. You got to remember, these aren't trick questions. This should be based on your experience. You should know the answer to this. This is show me how you think, how you're going to think through these problems in the field. And the best answers will always include what the situation or the problem is, your reasoning, the action you took or would take, and the outcome or principle behind it. And then at the end of the day, through all of this, every step, but this one in particular, you want to be a critical thinker. You don't want to vaguely answer, I would follow the protocol, because I'm like, well, that's great, but we have a problem, and this problem has more than just following the protocol. We need to know how you would interact with the sites, and how would you pull them in, or the other CRAs, or if there's a rogue CRA or a CTA, and everyone's going off. Like, there's so much more to that, because there are humans involved and there is nuance. So show us your critical thinking. Let's see what's happening.
Yeah, it all goes back to behavioral interviewing in a way, isn't it? And we have that really great worksheet on our blog that has sample questions that you can use to come up with these the answers. And these feed straight into a presentation if you're asked to do a presentation interview. And you're right, Maya, usually the presentation interviews are on higher level directors and above. But being able to quickly put a presentation together to explain how you would handle a situation is something that you should be able to do. And a lot of people will walk away from it, but I think that's silly. You're just showing that you have the competency to answer the question, and you have the competency to build very quickly, build a presentation deck, and you have the competency to be able to communicate that clearly and concisely to your future team. That's all it is. Yeah. That's it. That's all it is. Mm-hmm. So being able to do that, I think, is really, really important. And And again, why would you walk away from these things? I understand the job market is really tough. And I did an office hour yesterday. Savannah co-hosted it with me. And Savannah, there were some people on that office hours and you could just feel their frustration.
Yeah, it was, you know, at least three of them. You could just feel it.
Yeah, to the point to where they were defensive. And you could tell by the examples that they were giving in their interviews, they're self-bombing their interviews because they're defensive. You know, really? I don't know why you want this. I don't know why you're asking this question kind of attitude, right? Even though they weren't saying that. And I get it. I understand that. But you guys are going to have to breathe for a moment because the market is what the market is.
Yeah.
There is no magic wand that's going to fix this, you guys. And with 60% of the CRA candidates that we're seeing are falsifying all or part of their credentials. And another 20% that we're seeing that are AI, Gartner saying that's going to increase within the next 2 years. You are 20% of a candidate pool that's real people with real qualifications. If you don't go these extra steps, then you're walking away from a big opportunity. Do the steps, do them well. Be one of the ones that bubble up to the top, right? Why wouldn't you? They're interested enough to ask you to do them. Now, I know the application is a bit of a pain. I remember whenever I was considering leaving IBM, then this was way back and, you know, mid-late 2000s, they were having us do it. And I thought, well, how stupid is this? And then if you don't have multiple screens and you're copying and pasting, and then you're like, what did I tell the last application? I don't remember what I told the last application. I get it. I get all of that. Come up with a structure. Come up with a methodology that's consistent. Give it your all. Do your best. Because it matters. It matters on this side of the desk. Because we don't know if you're real or not. And if you don't show us that you're real by giving us real data, we're not going to call you back. It just is what it is. We scare easily. We can't afford a bad hire. You know that a bad hire could cost a sponsor up to $500,000?
Ugh. $500,000.
That's the current statistics. Bad hire, $500,000. Oh, every lost day of a study, also $500,000. Lost day of a study. You guys, these companies don't have this kind of money. They don't have money to redo, right? They're afraid to make a bad hire. So show them you're not a bad hire. Show them you're a real person with real qualifications.
All right. Thank you, team, for this discussion. I know a lot of steps, but you're worth every single step hiring.
Yes, you are.
You job seekers, you are worth these steps. So thank you for hanging in and listening. If you want to explore more of our content, you can visit craresources.com/blog to check out our latest articles and additional podcasts. You can also sign up to get this content delivered to your inbox. And feel free to reach out at CRA Resources for more information about our firm. We can't wait to work with you.